And it's something we had talked about before, and with the escalation of things in the Middle East, with Iran getting more deeply involved and all the craziness going on, that is the article we're going to send out. It was actually going to be a different one. So I've gone back, and it's not quite finished. There's still a few rough places in it, but I thought I would read it and just get feedback from our audience. And if there's anybody with a question or a thought, let's do that first. So is there anybody out there? Our calling number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, is 563-999-3581. Call that number. You'll be listening to the show directly. And then if you push one, we'll be having a conversation. So do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up, sweetie, or anybody in the chat room with a thought for us?
We do have a hand up, and it's Susan 610. You're on the air.
Hey, hi. I'll be very quick because I want to hear this myself.
Welcome, young lady.
I wanted to ask you about the previous show. I tuned in when I could, which was too late. It was pre-recorded, right, Ginny?
Yes, the one with Dr. Tim.
Was it pre-recorded?
It was. And
yeah. Do you know who he was interviewing?
Well, I was a little late coming in, but I believe that it was Laura McCowan, which she's the author of two different books, We Are the Luckiest and Push Off From Here. And then she's also the founder of the Luckiest Club. And I know that, you know, her information is, you know, she had been on the different, you know, drugs and things like that at an early age, and her experience after coming off of it. So I'm pretty sure that's who it is. I'll have to go back and listen to the very beginning of the show to catch her name, but 99% sure that's who it was.
Thanks. Well, I may or may not be able to. We're in a real crisis with Jonathan now. He's just completely in a terribly dark place, and we're talking occasionally. So I'll be listening, though. The Middle East topic is very, very much on our minds. So why don't you...
Well, Jonathan is on our minds.
Thank you.
As we do this, and extending your direction to support you in your efforts with him and to assist him in opening to the healing presence that you have to offer him.
Well,
so I'm holding the space.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
And
so go ahead and read.
Okay, Susan, I got a text from another listener. Thank you, Dawn, for giving me that. It was Brooke Stem, and it was a memoir on what causes side effects.
Brooke, could you spell the last name?
S-I-E-M.
Okay.
So
is that
thank
a
you.
New Journey's Dream thing?
I'm not sure.
Thank you. That's great. Tell your texter over there. Thank you so much.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Go for it, Michael.
All right. The name of her book is What Causes Side Effects? Is that what I understand you to say, Jean?
I'm just bringing it up, and she's got one that says, May Cause Side Effects, a memoir.
May Cause Side Effects, yeah.
And it's an unforgettable memoir about the turmoil of antidepressant withdrawal and the work that it took.
Well, holding space for her, and for informing, my offering is there's no such thing as side effects. Every drug is a disease disguised as a cure. It can shut down some energies, but which can appear like relief, but ultimately, beside every drug, I don't care what it is, beside every treatment, we've got to put healing. They're two different things. They're not thought of in the world as the same thing. But healing and treatment are two totally different things. Sometimes treatment is appropriate, and healing is always appropriate. That would be my offering on that topic. And so now we're going to look at the title of the article, at least so far, is An Aramaic Solution to Healing Conflict in the Mideast. Subtitled, Where Healing in the Real World Beats Scripture, Psychology, Physics, and Medicine. read, and if somebody's got a comment or an insight or, you know, something to share, put your hand up. I'd be happy to interrupt it. And I'm reading so I get some feedback on how it flows. And one of the things I have learned about myself is when I read something, I can more properly put it in order. So just, and it'll fit perfectly with everything we've been talking about from the Enlightenment books. So you cannot kill, drug, make war on, or punish mental illness out of existence. It must be directly faced and healed. I'm writing this in order to offer information that most human beings seem not to know. You're designed to know yourself as love, for love is the stuff you're made of. You are designed to be healthy, whole, cared for, and function as love. To the degree that you are not in the experience you were designed for, your body, your mind, and your life are going to reflect dis-ease, and you're living in blockage of truth. After 50 plus years of working with people, recovering the truth of this statement, the truth of who they are, it has become obvious to me that instructions on the deepest principles of healing are urgent. Please pass these tools for recovery on to others so they become available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. If you're uncomfortable, in trauma, under attack, or experiencing pain, these tools are going to change your life. This work will not show you how to treat your pain, for treatment is a world apart from healing. Healing only happens when we learn how to address and change all pain and suffering we experience at the level of cause. If you're comfortable and satisfied with the status quo of this article, it's likely to bring up a great deal of discomfort. And in fact, it's designed for that purpose. Approximately 4,000 years ago, in a text that is generally thought to be about religion, we discover that in its original language, Aramaic, it is about physics, physiology, psychology, and genetics. In it, a man named Job, after much suffering, offered the world a deep, difficult, and rarely comprehended lesson in responsibility, how the world actually works, and how to own your creatorship. In one sentence, Job explained the physics, the psychology, and emotional dynamics of how repeating, widespread traumatic events and suffering are created. And we could put in there and asked from generation to generation. It's amazing when you really break down that sentence, just how much powerful insight there is. And it's in Job 3:25. One sentence. He says it all. For the thing I greatly feared has come upon me. What I dreaded has happened to me. What Job was acknowledging was that he had troubles due to the functioning of his own mind. He admitted to himself and the world that his mind was inferior to the mind he was born with. When we have the eyes to see and the ears to hear, we understand that Job had the humbling insight that when fear and dread are running his mind, he's working against his own best interests. In admitting his tendency to blame and accepting responsibility for his dysfunctional mind, as we all can do, Job is opening the space for profound healing. He's stepping into the powerful, life-changing admission that he is the ultimate cause of his own suffering, loss, and the traumatic effects in his life. Note that I'm not saying he's to blame. He's just come to grips with his responsibility for his life, something very rare in our world today. In effect, Job is owning the fact that he is a particularly pernicious form of unconscious mental self-abuse, the twin mental illnesses of fear and dread. This, I offer, is the huge and necessary first step in healing. We must give up looking outside of ourselves for cause of our experiences and admit there's a problem inside. When we fully unpack Job's insight and apply it to our lives, we understand our part, as Job did, in causing the terrible events, the repeating generational patterns in our lives. He plainly and emphatically tells us that the feared and dreaded outcomes in our lives begin in our own minds. Life and the people we populate our world with are the result of a process we, through denial of responsibility, have lost control of. When we live in a mind fueled by fear and dread, we're limited to drawing people to us that resonate with the life of conflict, attack, pain, suffering, and seeming hopelessness. And why is this happening to me again experiences? The human mind I offer is meant to be fueled by love. Check out the energy natural to us as humans by simply holding quietly and with deep contemplation, one with an untainted mind, a newborn. Notice if its belly's full and its diaper's empty, the state of serenity. Job, when you unpack the seemingly simple insight above, is informing us that when we live in a mind run by fear and dread, and apply those mental energies to a fantasized outcome, we set in mind the blueprint for events that will be delivered to us by life. When we add additional unresolved emotional amplifiers, the thought complexes based in fear and dread, things like greed, guilt, and hostility in any of its forms, into the scenario, we have the perfect trifecta for victimhood and repeating trauma. And I want everybody to practice saying perfect trifecta 10 times really fast. So this, when understood, is a perfect definition of mental illness. Let's just read that one again. Job, when you unpack the simple insight above, it's informing us that when we live in a mind run by fear and dread, and apply those mental energies to a fantasized outcome, we set the blueprint for events that will be delivered to us by life. And I'm going to change that just a little bit. A fantasized outcome or a genetically. Implanted. Unresolved. Okay. We set the blueprint for events that will be delivered to us by life. When we add additional unresolved emotional amplifiers to thought complexes based in fear and dread, things like greed, guilt, and or hostility in any of its forms into the scenario, we have the perfect trifecta for victimhood and repeated trauma. This, when understood, is a perfect definition of mental illness. When we integrate, from the perspective of Job's understanding, truth, the words innocent and victim are an oxymoron. There are no victims, only volunteers. We volunteer by insisting the state of our mind is justified and is an effect of what is happening in our world. And not the cause. The profound conclusion implicate in Job's deep experiential learning is the fact that the power to bring about results in the mind lies in the mind entertaining a complex of negative thoughts and intensifying the energy of that complex with fear and dread. Of course, the complementary implication is that the mind entertaining a complex of constructive thoughts, intensified by the energy of that complex, and intensifying the energy of that complex with love, also has the power to bring about results in the world. It's been called positive thinking. There's far more to it than that. The expression of understanding that Job attained is one of the first historical indications, of which I'm aware, of a rudimentary understanding of the world of quantum physics. Job's observation of how his fear and dread, a applied to a concept held in his mind is, in fact, a conversation about the observer effect proven in the physics lab. The world that appears in perception to be outside of us is impacted by every energy that moves inside of us because we are all connected. If one wishes to rid themselves of the fear dreaded event, fighting against that result in the world is futile. For by simple resistive engagement, energy is added to the cause, which is within. Recall a particularly brilliant man's instructions 2,000 or so years ago, resist not evil. As long as fear and dread are attached to a negative fantasy in the mind, the world must deliver on its promise. Ask and you will receive. Guarantee. Somehow, any result will continue to arrive right on time, as anticipated, until its cause is removed. That's physics. This is a statement of our power as human beings to create results in our world. I offer that one of the main purposes of the rest of the books that accompany Job in that collection called the Bible are man's attempt to understand and resolve the dilemma Job presented. How does the blind application of fear to a clearly unwanted result bring about precisely the result in question, again and again? And what can I do about it? A family, many families, wiped out again. A centuries-old family conflict continues, each ignoring their ancestor Job and blaming each other. And, as in this case, each says, we really don't understand why this is happening to us again. Shocking events, not only in Israel and Gaza, but around the world, in families and communities all over the world. An equally shocking change of thinking and understanding will be needed to bring us to sanity and resolution. Do not expect the answer to conform to your understanding of how the world works, especially where your mind has already put the blame outside of yourself. Notice every time, quote, it has happened to you, you're the only one that was there. If, in bewilderment, you've asked the question, why is this happening to me again, recognize you're going to have to change some of the deepest unconscious dynamics at work in your own mind. And there is only one answer that will ever bring serenity and healing into reach for all sides in every conflict. This Mideastern generational war, as with virtually every cultural enemy and family squabble in history, has gone on too long. No one is born with hatred or enemies. Each is a learned, corrupted construct instilled within any mind that swims in its toxic mental, cultural, and family environments of fear and or hostility. Eventually, until questioned, living in these aberrant states will become normal, knowledge, and the way it is. All lies that appear true in a mind that's working from corrupted data. Anyone questioning what has become the cultural norm, like they are the enemy, will be labeled traitor and lumped in with said enemy. This is an idea usually promoted by those who are profiting off of a culture maintaining some particular group of enemies. Notice how often, as profit or other beneficial viability of one enemy fades, another is fabricated. Eisenhower warned us. Major General Smedley Butler, the most decorated Marine of his day back in 1935, wrote in detail about it. Read it free. War is a Racket, is the name of his book. There'll be a link in the article to that, but if you just Google Smedley, S-M-E-D-L-E-Y, Butler, War is a Racket, you can download from several sites. You can there's even a recording of it you can listen to. I worked about 30 years ago with a Jewish woman who lived in Israel. She shared with me that she became an activist and advocate for the Palestinian community when her own children were taught subtraction in the community school by minusing Arabs, their brothers. People who they were being taught were the enemy. Though I have no direct experience with such sad brainwashing of children from the Arab side of the equation, I have heard similar stories in reverse. Generational hate perpetuated through ignorance and unwillingness to go within and do the requisite work of cleaning up one's own defiled mind has become the norm. Read 1 Samuel 5:3. Now go and smite Amalek, and utterly destroy all they have, and spare them not, but slay both man and woman, infant, suckling, ox and sheep, camel and ass. Read Joshua 6:21. And they utterly destroyed all that was in the city, both men and women, young and old, the ox, the sheep, the ass, with the edge of the sword. Another version of that passage says, go in and clean house. Don't leave anything breathing. Don't leave a donkey, a child, a woman, an old man, or an old woman breathing. Wipe out Jericho. Those profiting the most from these ignorant, self-destructive commands put them in the mouth of the highest authority, and the wars between brothers go on. One has to be quite ignorant to hold the belief that a creator called love ever conceived of such an insane instruction. The work required for healing? As long as war and traumatic energetic memories exist in the psyche of humans, those dynamics will, when resonating into activity, reflect in the mind as thought disorders, distorted perceptions, and they will play out in the thoughts, words, and attitudes and behaviors in the world, and each will produce destructive results until healed. As long as atrocities remain unresolved in the minds, genes, family systems, in the teachings, myths, modeling, and stories of a people, generation after generation will live and die in the desert of unresolved, projected internal trauma, reflected in external experiences. Behaviors that produce all trauma are internally generated. These painful actions will be repeatedly played out within the family and or neighbors, which appear as quote-unquote enemies, within the unsuspecting self-inflicted mind. Carl Jung defined these unresolved thought disorders carried by everyone as the shadow, part of ourselves we've cut ourselves off from, and in turn projected into our brains images, dreams, and fantasies of others. Give me 1 second, I'm going to add a word here. In the ancient Aramaic language, these aberrant states of mind, when active, were understood to control attitudes, words, emotions, perceptions, and behavior, and were called devan, or demon. The Greeks had their pantheon of demons and had people chasing non-existent external creatures that are but projections of one's own dissociated mind. Fear, as Job discovered, is what set one such demon to be cast out. Job, with this projected, dissociated, insane state of mind, fear. Job, with this projected, dissociated, insane state of mind, fear, he virtually destroyed his life. How is such a demon cast out? Perfect love. We must put an end to the multi-generational, self-inflicted fantasy of victimhood that many mistakenly swear is true. When in denial, the pretense that something outside of us is the cause of what is moving within causes distortions in perception, a dysfunction of the mind. Due to the dissociation caused by denial, we populate our perception with demons, projections of our own thought disorders. In the ancient teachings, such a mind was called the mind of man, which has metaphorically been described as seeing through a glass darkly, or being lost in the desert. It's been described as the wolf, and in some cultures, the trickster, or the wily coyote. Never facing ourselves directly, we think we can live a normal life, pretending there are no skeletons, symbols of the parts of self that, in most family systems have been disowned and kept in the dark. When you realize the human mind is designed to be fueled by love, these dark, unresolved conflicts over generations become the root of perceptions reflecting the mental illness of fear and hostility. In a mind where love is restricted or avoided altogether by unresolved fear and or hostility, aberrant perception governs. Whether the mind is radically infected with unresolved thought disorders so as to be non-functional, or a less injured mind we identified as somewhat normal, angry, depressed, agitated, rageful, violent. What we need to admit is we're talking about a mental illness. In a trauma-informed mind, the shadow colors, defines and gives meaning to everything perceived, including the self and all others. Carl Jung could be seen as confirming Job's thesis about how deeply damaged his life has been by fear and dread when he says, "All of one's neighbors are in the controlled and uncontrollable fear. In lunatic asylums, it is a well-known fact that patients are far more dangerous when suffering from fear than when moved by hate or rage or hatred. With sufficient energetic trauma experienced, the experience of the self, as it truly is, as worthy, as capable, as acceptable, as honorable, as deserving of approval and being cared for, is obliterated. When a mind constructs its worldview and its experience of self through dynamics rooted in thought disorders based in fear, it self-inflicts pain. The fact that it was the only one present and therefore responsible for every painful experience, a mind so inflicted hallucinates an enemy to blame." Unknowingly, the mind caught in its own projections is engaging, as Job implied, in a self-destructive creative act based in fear. Unreal thoughts, thought disorders, bar access to the truth of who we and the other are. Carl Jung brilliantly outlined both the impact and the solution to succumbing to seeing ourselves in the world through such a mind. Until the unconscious or dissociated mind becomes conscious, it will direct our lives and we will call it fate. Greater than all physical dangers are the tremendous effects of delusional ideas. That is, fear-based thought disorders projected, which are yet denied all reality by our world-blinded consciousness. Our much-vaunted reason and our boundlessly overestimated will are sometimes utterly powerless in the face of unreal thoughts. Indeed, it is becoming ever more obvious that it's not famine, not earthquakes, not microbes, not cancer, but man himself who is the greatest danger to man, for the simple reason that there is no adequate protection against the psychic epidemic of projected fear, which are infinitely more devastating than the worst of natural catastrophes. The wolf inside the man is far more a threat to human existence than external forces. When mental forces become so toxic as to harm our overall well-being on an individual and collective level, a psychic epidemic can result. Modern society is prone to collapse due to a pandemic of delusional ideas. Pretty powerful insight from Carl Jung. We, individually and collectively, must stop projecting what we do not wish to deal with within ourselves. The true self-love is covered up by generation upon generation of identification with errant thoughts and feelings and with thought disorders about self and others. Those errors must be undone. If an energy moving within is based in any form of pain, hostility, or fear, it must be owned and removed. If not owned, its underlying cause remain hidden and therefore inaccessible, and the noise of it will cover up the subtle energy of one's ability to choose to heal. Remember, it was called, pardon me, the still small voice. Each effort at removal, though perhaps insincere, and seemingly futile at first, will weaken the noise of all pain. Sufficient weakening and Joyce will appear full-blown. In Aramaic, the removal process was called forgiveness. None of the three branches of the Abrahamic tree, today considered to be world religions, understood what their common wisdom keeper, Job, offered about the invisible, tragic impact of fear and dread on the operation of their minds and the atrocities visited upon them and the lives of those surrounding them. As a result, someone like the Hatfields and McCoys, these family members have been killing each other for centuries. On June 14, 2003, the Hatfields and McCoys, who had been warring and killing each other since 1963, signed a peace agreement. Perhaps a model for healing? Enemies do not exist in the world. They are a fabrication, a perceptual construct of the projected shadow side of one's own mind. The felt experience of an enemy is so painful. The whole ordeal is internally generated and projected into one's visual and sensory experiences by the brain. While the mind can be tricked by its own visual hallucinations into believing its projection, believing the cause is external, the pain is still felt in the body, housing the problem of denied and dissociated fear. Now many will say, oh, none of this applies to me. But let me be clear here. We're talking about any child in any culture, history, who's experienced fear and did not have adults who could guide them through healing that fear. And I don't mean comforts them. I mean actually knows how to heal fear. Well, Michael, now you talk about virtually everybody, including you and I. I think you're getting my drift. One such expression of this dynamic is the parent who attempts to explain away their perverted actions based in unresolved thought disorders toward a son or daughter. I'm only beating you, berating you, degrading you because I love you, and it hurts me more than it hurts you to do this. No, Mom, no, Dad. You're abusing me because you and I are existing in a desert of unresolved generational family trauma, and I offer it does not hurt you in the least to do this to me. It alleviates and gives vent to your unresolved generational pain, the pain you refuse to own and forgive, and the relentless, unconscious fear and pain you live with every day. This seemingly resolvable pain is why people hold their breath, sigh in exasperation, fight, rage, and see enemies everywhere they turn. Ever look at the divorce rate? And the number of people who appear to be married but in their hearts were divorced years ago? It's estimated that worldwide in 2022, war and violence ended 238,000 lives and cost $17.5 trillion. 2022. And so many people on Earth were killed in war. And that's the estimated cost of it. Can you imagine if we had $17.5 trillion to invest in the health and the well-being and the care of starving children around the world, especially the ones here in America? I should say including the ones here in America? What could be done with that $17.5 trillion? And by the way, experts tell us that we're living through, you'll get this, we are living, 238,000 people, $17.5 trillion. Experts say we're living in one of the most peaceful times in human history. Canadian Journal of Peace and Conflict Studies estimates that from 3600 BC to 1974, there have been approximately 2 billion people murdered in war. All because of the healable, generational mental illness of dissociated fear and dread projected. And if we listen to many conversations going on in the world today, we're on the precipice of another avalanche of murderous bloodbaths globally. Rachel Yuta and her colleagues, researchers in the growing field of epigenetics and the intergenerational effects of trauma, have long studied mass trauma survivors and their offspring. The latest results reveal the dependence of people who survived the Holocaust have changed physiology and nervous systems. Different stress hormone profiles than their peers, perhaps predisposing to anxiety disorders. And I would offer that it also predisposes them to power person dynamics, i.e. doing what was done to them. And that comes from an article in Scientific America. If you want to look it up, Scientific America: Descendants of Holocaust Survivors of Altered States of Stress Hormones. Also, if you go on YouTube and look for The Ghost in Your Genes, it's powerful what the research has been done there, what their understanding of these generational energetic patterns. Environmental non-genetic inheritance and susceptibility to disease. Epi influences that become part of our DNA have been identified. Job, who lived approximately 2200 BC, told us what infected his life. Even Bogo said it. We have met the enemy, and the enemy is us. Many, if not all, of our wounds and conflicts, and therefore our pain and inclinations toward violent perceptual constructs, emotions, thoughts, and behaviors are rooted in genetically inherited traumas, Jung's shadow. Multi-generational assaults reinforced through unconscious actions generation after generation, projected and stored, pardon me, and projected repeatedly toward family, friends, enemies, and self ad nauseum. Each painful event appears to be a distinct and separate, seemingly connected by nothing except that it's happening again. However, all of those effects are directly connected to unresolved generational trauma. As Job realized, his multifaceted loss and suffering was connected to his own fear and dread. Once again, Carl Jung expands our understanding. He precisely described the source of our unconsciously driven behavior and the seemingly unavoidable repeating of generational trauma and conflict, as he explains why the patterns repeat and the only way true resolution can be achieved. Thank you, Carl Jung, for your brilliant insight. Whatever is rejected from the self appears through blame in the world, called perception, as an event. We meet ourselves and our projections on others time and again in 1,000 disguises in the path of life. Until the unconscious becomes conscious, it will direct our lives and we will call it fate. Everything that appears to irritate us about others can lead to the understanding and healing of oneself. Again, thank you, Carl Jung. It is a trick perpetuated by a biased, corrupted perceptual construct in the mind that allows us to think that these events are all separate and separated from each other. The connecting link, when the mind allows us a glimpse, is that they are all based in unresolved trauma that, when activated, obscure the subtle, permanently available human experience of ourselves as our true nature love. This is a strictly internal problem and can only be resolved internally. When disconnected from our true essence, vision is blocked by internally generated pain that appears to be externally caused. We are reduced to seeing these unresolved but resolvable dynamics as outside events, another trick of the mind infected by fear and dread, an almost universal mental illness that people even play out with their own tender children. But the eye deceives and the ear hears falsely. Well, those having eyes do not see, and those having ears do not perceive truth. When in denial, our projections are quite literally painted on the inside of our eyeballs by our own minds. Thought disorders converted to pictures in the mind pictures that appear to be outside of us remain unconscious, unresolved in the psyche of individuals, families, and communities, and attack and defense will seem to be the only options. A gentleman named Joost Mierlo wrote a book entitled The Rape of the Mind and says this: the totalitarian systems of the 20th century represent a kind of collective psychosis. Whether gradually or suddenly, reason and common human decency are no longer possible in such a system. There is only a pervasive atmosphere of terror, projection of the enemy, imagined to be in our midst. Thus, society turns on itself, urged by the ruling authorities. Again, that's written by Joost Mierlo, M-E-E-R-L-O-O, in a book entitled Rape of the Mind. And of course, if you listen today in America and how politicians are talking to the mob, there's a particular woman who, to her supporters, told them to strap on a Glock for the coming election. Need to wake up. The illusion of separation and the belief in the external enemy is the substitute for one's own mind turned against itself. It's a result of internal corruption of perception created by thought disorders like those of fear and hostility. Albert Einstein, addressing this issue in 1950, opined the resolution of bondage to block projected unconscious pain. A human being is spatially and temporally limited piece of the whole, what we call universe. He experiences himself, his thoughts and his feelings as separate from the rest, an optical delusion of his consciousness. The quest for liberation from this bondage is the only object of true religion. Not nurturing or tolerating the illusion, but only overcoming it, gives us the attainable measure of inner peace. This is our release from compulsive violence and the endless propensity of the mind to experience depression and pain, and therefore manufacture enemies. Once again, the process of release is through first century Aramaic forgiveness. Do we want resolution or vengeance, which, for those in the unconscious, refer to as justice? The 13th century Sufi mystic Rumi offers, love is the cure for your pain, and will keep giving, love is the cure, or your pain will keep giving birth to more pain until your eyes constantly exhale love as effortlessly as your body yields its scent. We must put an end to this multi-generational fantasy of victimhood that our corrupted perceptions, that our optical illusions seem to prove as true. We must rethink the lie that somehow appearing as a victim in one's own perception earns the right to exact vengeance as we block awareness of damage upon our own psyche by even thinking about vengeance and what that inflicts on us. Justified attack in the triple insanity destroyer of fear, hostility, and blame lends an air of credibility to stories members of warring communities tell each other about those terrible others. The fallacies of these stories is Job's monumental contribution to being restored to mental health and thus having everything he lost restored. That which I feared most. Present love is the master solvent of trauma. If it is not love, it is generating lies in the mind. Someone in the community has to get big enough to bring healing, first to their own trauma, and then pass that skill to others. Most will say forgive the perpetrators of the events that trigger the hidden PTSD. Unfortunately, this means that underlying patterns, often generational, are ignored and left hidden to be activated another day. Please stop listening to forgiveness advice that says you must forgive them. Forgive continuously, but never forgive anyone. Letting another off the hook for what is original inside the self is total error. The person telling you that the solution to your repeating pattern is forgiving someone else for what is happening inside of you knows nothing about removing trauma from your genes, your mind, your emotions, or your body. If someone tells you that you need to forgive another or yourself, understand they know nothing about actual forgiveness. Never forgive anyone. Yet, again, learn to forgive continuously. I know that sounds like a conflict, but let me explain. When feeling frustrated, angry, annoyed, terrorized, murderous rage, afraid, lonely, aversion, responding out of wounds, when blaming others, when blaming self, when unable to hold to a mind of love, or whatever your challenge is, it's always an opportunity to heal the pain constructs of my own mind, body, nervous system. Sadly, when I hold unresolved pain and trauma within, it is easy to put the underlying energies of that trauma, when triggered into activity, into my brain's internally constructed perceptual images of that other. The experience, the pretense that they're the cause of the repeating trauma I'm experiencing is the true definition of projection. When I make pictures in my mind of others out of my internally hidden dissociated pain, I believe my mind's hallucination and can pretend others are the reason I'm in pain. In our world, usually, by about the age of 4, each child is brainwashed into becoming a very devout, card-carrying member of the one-world universal religion of blame. This is the way the mind's dissociated trauma, its pain-based interpretation of events, appears to be the truth, which directly leads away from understanding what's really going on and away from healing again. Have you ever been the object of another's devout belief that you're the problem in their lives? Perhaps it's time to question your own membership in the Church of Blame. I repeat, many, if not all of our wounds, and therefore our pain, are rooted in genetically inherited traumas, traumas that are held inside of us. Multi-generational assaults reinforced through unconscious actions, generation after generation, stored and repeated ad nauseum. Each pain perception appears to be different, but all are based on that hidden dissociated trauma that, when activated, obscures the subtle, permanently available experience of ourselves as our true nature love. Never imposed from the outside, blocks to the awareness of ourselves as love are internal and removable if one has the technology to do so. All healing, the return to love, is a strictly inside job. The act of removing intergenerational trauma and pain causing thought disorders is the true definition of forgiveness. All perception is autobiographical. The constructs of our minds tell us first and foremost what's going on inside of us. Until generational traumas are removed, we are easily tricked into believing the false pictures and perceptions generated as a result of denial by our own minds. As long as we believe that something outside of us is the cause, rather than just the trigger of what's moving within, we inhabit a world of false perception, a world made up by our own minds. The shadow. Living in the world of realities generated by our minds voids the experience of actuality, voids truth. Feelings do not come from seeing or experiencing something. They come from the activation of internally generated energies, all self-imposed. Blamers would do well to understand denial. the act of thinking or speaking as though something outside of oneself is the cause of what's moving on the inside. Denial results in instant dissociation, the hiding of truth which blocks awareness of one's own internal dynamics, resulting in an unnatural condition called the unconscious mind. There's a great tune. I'm putting a link in the article, but there's a great tune if you search for it on YouTube by Alanis Morissette called Madness. She lays this whole article out in a very powerful song. And through a particular painful reality, 87 different times with 42 different people, you were the only one that was there every time. The echo of denial sounds like, you made me so mad. You make me so afraid. You make me so sad. You hurt me. I'm an innocent victim and you attacked me. The very things that people don't want to look at or deal with are the things that are most urgent to be looked at and dealt with. And rest assured, life will give you every opportunity you need. Were you unconsciously directing the show? And life's purpose, when we dissociate from pain, is to kick us right square in the limitation. How do we make the unconscious conscious? The tools for reliably opening what in the ancient teachings was called the veil of the temple, the body, beneath which we keep our pain hidden. The barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious mind, and removal of assault energy appeared 2,000 years ago in the Aramaic language. The ancient tool of forgiveness is a process that uncovers and removes what we've hidden through denial within ourselves. The fake Greek substitute, pardoning, changed forgiveness from an internal process to an outer directed act. Forgive. Let them off the hook, we've been told. With that errant directive, the simple, effective healing technology of forgiveness was lost to humanity. The Greek misinterpretation, we are convinced we need to be forgiven for something rather than realize there's something to be forgiven that is removed from our minds. This slippery twist has left millions letting others off the hook for what is generated by their own minds, rather than taking responsibility and removing from their minds, forgiving the projected and hidden, often generational content within themselves. Letting someone outside of us off the hook, what is going on in us will never rid us of our experience of internally generated hurt, upset, or pain. Outer directed acts do not bring correction to internally generated dynamics. Those dynamics of hurt, pain, and upset. Engaging in actual forgiveness creates a visceral opening that facilitates the flow of light and love into every instant, every experience of our lives and physiology. Alone or lonely, afraid or sad, rageful or hateful, through forgiveness, space is created for love to flow within and create a clean and open space within the mind and the transmutation, the removal of the energy of one's pain happens in an instant of actual forgiveness. Lived pain or turmoil is always an invitation to end denial, to learn and apply forgiveness. You can go to our website, whyagain.org. There's a book cover in the middle of the page. Why is this happening to me again? Click on that cover, drill down, and you can download that book free in one of 9 different languages. Perception. The world we think we see with our eyes is a hologram, generated of past content, a projection of the mind. We see nothing with our eyes, we see with our brains. There is no life in a hologram. Neuroscientist Anil Seth explains, perception is a mental construct generated by the body-mind nervous system. The whole world we think we see is an hallucination unique to each person. When we agreed on our shared hallucinations, we call it reality. And you can find that video just by going into YouTube and looking for Anil, A-N-I-L, Seth, S-E-T-H, TED Talk. CIA research, perception is demonstrably an active rather than a passive process. Literally constructs the world you see. Reality or perception, the output of the mind, is either a high-quality accurate picture or a poor-quality deceptive projection. The experience of the presence of love in one's physiology indicates the mind is on track, and any form of fear and or hostility is an indicator that the mind is using corrupt data to build its projections rather than reflecting accurate information about actuality. When using corrupt data, the mind massages its unconscious content into pictures that appear to be of external things. When I tell you that you're the cause of what's happening inside of me, I have become the equivalent of a full-fledged, card-carrying member of that one-world universal religion of blame. All perception, the world made up by us, includes sensations in the body, and they're all autobiographical. Projection is not the act of pretending something inside of me is outside of me. It is the act of building realities out of resonated internal content and pretending that the hologram, that image that results, is actually out there. And in the article we'll have some links. One will be an awesome piece of work that Magda shared with us a couple of years ago on the radio show, her great-grandfather. There'll be a link to the video, What is the World and How Do I Forgive? There'll be a link to the full 3-hour workshop of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? So, in the lower level, it'll be live, active workshops that people will be able to listen to. So reality or perception, the output of the mind, is simply something we create for ourselves, by ourselves. And if we're ever going to change what's happening in the world of conflict, whether it's the Middle East or whether it's right here at home, this is a process that's going to change the game. And so at this moment, that's the completion of our article, and that leaves us with about 5 minutes if anybody has a thought or a question.
You do have a hand up.
Call in number 5. Okay, let's go for it, sweetie.
It's area code 225. You're on the air. Who do we have?
Hey, how you guys doing? This is Sean.
Hey.
Welcome. Good to talk with you, Sean.
Yeah, good to talk with y'all.
Are you calling from London?
No, actually, I'm in the States, and you remember the FHU Europe Skype me. Yep.
Cool. Well, welcome. Where are you in the States?
I'm actually in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Yeah, so that's where,
right down in the swampland, boy.
Oh, yeah. It's something. Actually, we had pretty good weather the last couple days, and I've been having a buddy come over, and he brought some food yesterday. We grilled it out on the pit, and we talked about what prayer does and energy and all these different neat things. It's amazing. I didn't grow up in church or anything, but it's amazing to see, not judging, not comparing, but just seeing, people who grew up in church and they have had a life of churchianity, and you see how limited they are in their understanding or in what they think they know, you know. But and some of these guys, they've been on, you know, the SHU Europe thing and whatnot. You know, you just get people involved in what you can. You expose them to the different things where you can. And he's actually got one of the Why Again books, one of the seven that I got, I don't know, a few weeks ago. I've given all of them out but three. And two more are set to go to like a last chance school. And I'm hoping to, you know how you can't really talk anybody into doing anything, but, you know, I'm hoping right. to talk one of the teachers into doing like a, you know, a daily reading or something, you know, a 15-minute reading on the book, you know, it may seem odd or whatever at first, but the story is, you know, with Richard is engaging. You know, there's something about the way it's written that captures their attention, but I didn't really call to get all off on to all of that. I actually owe Jeannie a slight apology. So one of the things that I wanted to do for you guys was take the old archives and update them
right,
from MP3 to the to MP4 to convert them and then
right.
Get them up to your YouTube for you. But for the past week now, every day after work, I've been trying different programs. You should see the desktop. So my iMac is limited to what it will upgrade to on the operating software. And there are no programs right now that I can get to work. I was able to get on a website, and they allow you to download the old versions. And so
right.
I've tried several of them, and they'll load, and they'll start to open, but I can't get any of the interfaces up or anything. So I'm at a crossroads. Oh. So I would literally have to buy a new computer, you know, at this point. And those are several hundred dollars. So.
Understood.
But look, I'll just send you guys $100 to pay it forward to somebody if you know, if you have, I don't know if you guys actually have anyone who's able to do the work also, you know, until you could get others, but I would encourage you to maybe make a mention every few radio shows or so, asking, you know, if anyone is handy in that, but it's
right.
something I would have loved to do, but I'm at a stuck point. For the moment.
Well, we'll hold the space that it went, and if the door is it's time for it to open, that will open, and, you know, we'll move forward. And, you know, basically what we do is we take all the resources we have and what's the next project we can do, and, you know, this is
yeah.
one of them, so perhaps that'll fall into place and
yeah.
rock and roll.
I've looked at a few different computer options and such, and it's tempting, you know, but to spend the money, you know how the whole thing goes.
Oh yes,
you know, so
for sure
migrating all the files and everything like that over, but I'll just send you guys $100 or something, and can I do that through the website, right, on the donate?
Yeah, if you just go
and,
if you just go to whyagain.org, the very bottom of the page, there's a
yeah.
donate link, and that would be awesome. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
no,
you
absolutely.
The support and the willingness.
Yeah, definitely. I wish that I could have that underway, but yeah, it is what it is. It sounds like you're reading something that you had previously written, maybe. Is that right?
I was
catching parts of the
show.
It's
actually an article that I'm working on currently live. I'm getting ready to publish it.
Oh, good. Yes. Because I signed up for the newsletter, so I would get that, correct?
It will go out in the newsletter within the next day or two, yes.
Excellent. All right.
What will happen is it'll go out in the newsletter, and it'll also be on a page on our website, and it's something that will continuously be edited for who knows how long, and upgraded as we work on it. So,
Perfect. But it'll come out in the newsletter, yes.
Awesome. Well, I don't know if you have anyone else who wanted to get up on the show, but instead of just continually emailing with all these excuses, I just wanted to call and talk to you and Jeannie right quick, let y'all know that I'm working on it. But
appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, all for right. Sure thing, and I appreciate answering all the questions and everything. So.
Okay, thanks for holding the space.
Right. Yeah,
all right, Lily, take care.
All right, y'all. Lots of love out to you.
Yeah, take care. Got it. Returned. All right, blessings. Take care. Bye-bye. And we're down to the last seconds. We're actually a little bit over time. It's being patient with us. So thanks, everybody, for joining us. It's the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.